Equity America, 28 minutes before the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here, and a little history lesson, if it's okay with you. A lot has been said recently about Christopher Columbus. And some of this has come across in a way that you know, for us that consider ourselves to be historians, you start going, wait a minute, we're on hallowed ground here. And it's very dangerous, the freewheeling conversation, the ideas, and the opinions that are flying around regarding Christopher Columbus. And I'm really grateful for our next guest, Andrew Rowan, UC Berkeley Harvard law graduate who practiced law as a partner of a major New York City law firm. He is the author, this is his first novel, Encounters Unforeseen, 1492 Retold. Last year was the 525th anniversary of Christopher Columbus's discovery of the West. And, you know, Andrew, I really appreciate you coming on. I appreciate all the hard work. This is a researcher's book almost, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is, Bill.
Yeah, 6 years in the making. Some might say 6 years in a lifetime, because this wasn't something you just checked out on Google and said, okay, hey, I'm gonna be able to set the record straight here.
No, I spent about 2 or 3 years reading the primary sources. And since the Tainos didn't have written history themselves, the Tainos being the Native American tribe Columbus met in the Caribbean, I also read works by modern anthropologists, linguists, archaeologists, and so forth to get some more perspective on their views of the encounters with Columbus.
Why did this story attract you?
Well, I've always read a lot of history, particularly about the European settlement of the Americas. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of literature about the topic in the 18th and 19th centuries where you can read about the events from a bicultural perspective, so to speak, seeing a Native American viewpoint side by side with the European. For example, there are lots of books depicting Sitting Bull's thoughts side by side with Custer's.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get back to 1492, there really isn't anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I noticed that. It disappointed me. I began to read the primary sources, Columbus's journal, obviously, but there are quite a few other primary sources. My reading became a hobby. I visited the sites in Haiti and the Dominican Republic where the Taino chieftains lived. And at some point I decided there was enough primary source evidence that I could write a valid account from both sides.
Mm-hmm. Were you concerned, as I have been, regarding the current rewrite? And I say that there's some of this rewrite, it gets dangerous when it is more based on, you know, maybe Google-type research or even conjecture. I think it's quite dangerous when you take some hallowed history, which Christopher Columbus is part of. I would think that we would want to embrace an understanding, as you say, of Europe coming west, because that's our very DNA.
That's right. It was a daunting task, and I knew that when I stepped into it, I was stepping into hallowed ground, as you say, and that there would be criticisms from people that either held, you know, a Eurocentric viewpoint to which they were wedded, or a Native American viewpoint that was extreme. What I tried to do in each scene I write in the book, every sentence of the book is try to be objective. Mm-hmm. I was raised with a pro-Columbus viewpoint, as I think many of my generation were. I learned about his good traits, you know, his being a self-made man, his perseverance through adversity, his skill as a mariner, and so forth. But his treatment of Native Americans was left to, at best, a footnote.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of had to unlearn that, and it was hard to do. And obviously, no one can be totally objective, but that's what I'm trying to do, present Columbus, both good and bad, the Native American thoughts and beliefs and religion side by side with the European thoughts and beliefs and Christianity, and let the reader decide their view of the encounter.
What would the Native Americans say?
Well, going back to the encounters in 1492 and 1493, no one on either side had any view of the next 525 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was a virgin experience. The first question both people had when they met on that beach was the other person friend or enemy?
Mm-hmm.
The Tainos had never seen people with such pale skin or wearing so much clothing or with a larger body size of Europeans or body hair of Europeans, and they wondered whether they were spirits or men. Gradually, they became acquainted with each other. Columbus comes with the European Christian outlook that he's entitled to subjugate heathen populations when he finds them.
Mm-hmm.
And during the course of my book, the Taino chieftains he meet, you know, at first they want to trade with him because he has all these spectacular things they've never seen before. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. But by the end of it, a few of the Taino chieftains have really begun to figure out that this person may be the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my book ends in 1493, before the subjugation of the Caribbean Taino homeland begins. But you can see in Columbus's thoughts what his intent is, which the Pope blesses in 1493.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the beginning of the Native American distrust and formation of a view that possibly these people are the enemy. Now in 1494 through 1496, Columbus tried to subjugate the Taino homeland.
Mm-hmm.
Was successful, obviously. But at that point, the Taino chieftains in my book rose up and fought against them.
Mm-hmm. Now, when Columbus was there, I mean, was he there and then left and came back? And you know, in terms of his navigation and how he came back to, I mean, initially though the local chieftains were skeptical, but like you say, people bought into
four voyages. You know. The Santa Maria sank on the first voyage, so mm-hmm. he only went back to Europe with two ships, and he left a garrison in what is now modern Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
Isabel and Ferdinand, the king and queen of Spain, were tremendously excited that they had new colonies, and they dispatched him immediately back on his second voyage.
Mm-hmm.
So he came back in September 1493, and then from 1493 through 1496, he subjugates the island he called Hispaniola,
mm-hmm.
which is the modern Haiti and the Dominican Republic. And then he came back in 1496. He went on two more voyages. He lost favor with his sovereigns, but by then, Spanish conquistadors were petitioning the king and queen to make further voyages, and the Spanish colonization of the Caribbean and Central and South America began.
Mm-hmm. And the garrison that was left behind, how big was that garrison, Andrew?
It was roughly equivalent in size to the crew of the Santa Maria. That was the number of men they couldn't take back. So mm-hmm. there were about 38 men left there. I'm not going to spoil the book for those who want to read it as
right.
a novel, but by all European accounts, their conduct deteriorated into lawlessness. And one of the Taino chieftains in my book, in October or November 1493, massacres them.
Andrew Owen is with us. We're talking about his book that was heavily researched, 6 years in the making, Encounters Unforeseen, 1492, retold. Stay with us. More coming up.
It's Bill Martinez live.
No other love.
The way you like me, fresh every day, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific. Welcome back, America. This very independent Bill Martinez live radio show, 14 minutes before the top of the hour. We're visiting with Andrew Rowan. his book tremendously researched. I mean, it is amazing. Just go to the sources part of the book and you see all the research that was done. I mean, it wasn't like he was, taking a vacation for 6 years. I mean, he was deep into this, visiting areas, dealing with original documentation as much as possible to get us a balanced perspective, the if you might say, the true story. Because like Andrew Rowan, I got to say, Andrew, like you, I was influenced by the information that was given to us in school about Columbus. There's been recent uproar about Columbus and trying to maybe rewrite history or figure this out. But I think your book goes a long way in giving us a balanced approach, because it's like anything, when you are going to let go of something and reach for something different, then you need to know that what you're reaching out for has some veracity, and it's not just based on tradition.
Right. My book attempts to recount what actually happened based on primary sources and anthropological studies, and how what was happening was understood from both people's perspectives. My mother was a school teacher, and I wanted my children to understand both sides of the story, mm-hmm. Kind of like she would have taught it.
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate the opportunity here, because like I said, we have, occasionally there have been outbursts we see in the media, and you go, wait a minute, what is going on? Is somebody trying to obliterate history here? Rewrite something, or what is going on, in terms of an anti-American spirit. But I think that, the truth will hold up that which is valuable ultimately, and this is the opportunity. When you talked about the Taínos, as a people, let's talk about their culture. What was the society like there in Haiti and the Dominican Republic and pre-Columbus?
Well, I came away with a great admiration for their society, which inhabited modern Haiti, Dominican Republic, but also Puerto Rico, Jamaica, the Bahamas, and the Turks and Caicos. We sometimes look back at prior civilizations like Greece, Rome, China, and India to find examples of how people lived and examples of things that maybe we've lost in our culture that were good, even though we're technologically advanced. The Taínos lived peacefully among themselves. No one hungered because they shared food as communal property. They didn't have religious strife or intolerance. And most importantly, they valued civility and respect in daily life. They valued respectful conduct. That was part of their culture and part of being considered a good Taíno.
Mm-hmm.
It's haunting. But when you read the European chroniclers' descriptions of how the chieftains acted, including Columbus's own descriptions in his journal and as many other writings, it's haunting that this civility and respect in their daily life seems to far have surpassed our own society in the United States in 2018. Mm-hmm. That may not be a high bar at this point,
right.
But it was very enlightening to read about how this civilization, which had no technological advancement compared to ourselves, obviously, mm-hmm. really led an admirable quality of existence.
Kind of amazing, when you think here it is, an educated, group comes from Spain with all that and a bag of chips, and they're going to take over. And what have they done? But, maybe create chaos here.
Well, European civilization advanced across the Americas. I am proud of aspects of European civilization,
mm-hmm.
As I assume you and most of us are.
Right.
But we haven't been taught the bad parts of what happened. That's kind of surprising, since it was 300 years of enlightenment in between, mm-hmm. and you can tell that what trickle down as much as it should to our educational system, so that 1492 is still taught in a Eurocentric way rather than a bicultural way.
Is that reason for the seemingly harsh rejection of a exceptional America today?
I don't know whether I'd go there or not. I think that we have a lot of debates now about parades, statutes, like the statute in Columbus Circle, and it engenders a lot of press coverage that gets extreme. Mm-hmm. What I try to do in my book is present something adding to the European side of the story. It's additive. It's not subtractive. It takes what I think is a fairly traditional European account of Columbus, the Spanish sovereigns, the doctrines of the Pope, so forth, set mm-hmm. that forth much as the way a historian would in novel form, obviously,
right.
and adds to that an additional understanding of the Tainos side. And the people living then, again, were having a virgin encounter. They didn't have 525 years of history to get them polarized.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see how they related with each other. There were friendships formed.
Mm-hmm. Well, so here you have the influence, the European influence coming in, and everything's turned upside down. Suddenly, principles are being taught. I mean, on top of coercion, this had to just be absolute, terror in some regards for the Tejanos.
Oh, it was. And Columbus committed atrocities, and the people who followed him were actually even worse. I'm going to write a sequel or two to my book, and that'll come out. The sad thing is when you criticize Columbus, you're criticizing, really, I think, European civilization.
Mm.
When he came back in 1493, the Pope, Pope Papal Bulls, proudly proclaiming that what he had done would bring Christianity to a heathen world, and instructing Ferdinand and Isabella that I, the Pope, am awarding you the Taino homeland. He didn't use the word Taino.
Mm-hmm.
The Taino homeland, and your duty is to Christianize them. And there was Columbus brought slavery to the New World, successor conquistadors brought even more slavery. There were massacres commencing in 1494. Obviously, European diseases came across with the Europeans and the animals they brought, and there was a tremendous decline in population due to plague and disease. It's one of the most horrific stories in history, I think.
Exactly. Well, Andrew, as you were going through all this research and as you were unfolding it, was there any one thing that really stuck out for you? Because it seems like a lot of dominoes here are starting to fall, and I don't know if if that's even possible to think about maybe one thing that was the biggest surprise or the biggest wow for you in this discovery.
Yeah, let me give you two, because I want to be balanced here. I don't want to be totally negative in the sense that all you're learning about is atrocities. One thing that really surprised me was the extent to which, in our language today, Taino words have survived.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us don't know it, but a lot of the words we use today are Taino.
Mm-hmm.
Hurricane comes from the Taino word hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
Tobacco is the Taino word. Canoe, maize, hammock, barbecue. They all have derivatives in the Taino words. So in some way, the genocide that occurred didn't totally wipe out the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Second, you go down to the Caribbean, or in fact, you go around New York City, and I'm sure you can go around Miami, and other places.
Exactly.
And there are plenty of people who have Taino roots.
Mm-hmm.
There was largely a genocide, but the Taino people survived in isolated areas in the Caribbean. And more than that, there was intermarriage and interbreeding. So Taino blood exists in some cases in large percentage proportions of a person's blood
mm-hmm.
among many people in the Caribbean
right.
and elsewhere.
Exactly.
So they did survive.
Mm-hmm. And with it, certain precious aspects of their culture continue, if even subtly. In terms of the balance, you say the positive, so we've only got about 20 seconds left here, so maybe it's unfair, and maybe we just need to have you back for a follow-up on this, because this is really fascinating stuff. And again, I appreciate all the hard work that went into this, and of course, you've already teased us and said there's going to be part due coming up, right?
Yes, there is.
Absolutely. Andrew Rowan, author of the book Encounters Unforeseen, 1492 Retold. This is Bill Martinez. Thank you so much, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure.